Xavier now? How's it going?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well because this week you took me all the way digitally to the Ukraine. I've never spoken to someone in Kiev, and you made that dream come true.
Happy to hear that. So today we met with Olga Kovalenko, who is a marketing specialist based in Ukraine. And she shared with us a lot about her discipline and what she's doing on a daily basis. What did you think about that interview, Werner?
Let me be honest. It was quite an interesting interview for us to set up, right? Because marketing itself is like experience design. It's a very broad space. I had my reservations. I met Olga. She's awesome. We had a good conversation. Look, she's really focused on email marketing and the more technical side of digital marketing, which I still think provided us with a brilliant show, and also the fact that she's recently finished a PhD. It's just an indication for me how serious she is about what she's doing, and I think that's tangible in today's show.
So yeah, there is a depth of content in that interview. So without further ado, please welcome Olga.
Hi, my name is Olga. I started my marketing journey in a youth organization called Aja Kiev as a PR responsible. And then I made my way to customer support and dealt with VIP client management. So the management of clients who spend a lot of money, who are valued and who are profitable for the business. Then I transferred to marketing. I worked a bit as a social media marketer and then moved to email, which is now my primary function at work, together with just general content marketing, online reputation management, and with a focus on retention.
Olga, thank you for joining us for a second time. We had a few internet problems. I thought it was only a South African thing, but it seems to be prevalent across the globe. And Olga, we always kick off the show by asking our guest, what is your value proposition?
Well, I think the value proposition of everyone is a combination of soft and hard skills. So this may seem like a mandatory soft skill, and it is, but not everyone can really master it well. I'm good at getting things across. I'm good at formulating what I need and what issues need to be solved and communicating that to people. Sometimes, especially during meetings when everyone gets lost in their own train of thoughts, getting back on track is vital in order to reach any success. As for hard skills, then most of them are in email marketing, online reputation management. Since I'm the only email marketer in Trionic at the moment, so everything's on me. And hopefully I know a lot about it.
Tell me, Olga, how did you find your calling? How did you get into online marketing?
I wanted to do marketing for a while, but my university degree actually says philology, English philology. So I wasn't sure about how I was going to make it to marketing. And luckily, I was able to successfully do it with my public relations background from a youth organization, which I didn't get paid for. And that was enough to get a starting position in the marketing department of Trionica, which I'm very grateful for.
I mean, the show is about design, right? Do you see yourself as a designer?
Yeah, I would say so, because any website, any web page, it is not only about graphics and animated elements. It's also about text, which is basically what I'm responsible for. Because if there's not enough text on the web page, the user will not feel comfortable with it. And if there's too much of it, it'll also be bad. So there's a fine line for finding that middle where you have just enough text to get what you need across and what the customer wants to hear from you, and not making it too long so they don't get bored.
Exactly. And so I would kind of summarize what you just said is that you're an agent of effective communication. And then I also hear in your voice, and I think Jonathan mentioned it before when we were talking about getting you on the show, is that you are super passionate about your agency. And what are the typical problems that you are trying to solve for your clients?
Well, we work with, we have several e-commerce projects with which we work. And each strategy, we usually set a different task for ourselves. So among these tasks would be increasing the average or the average price per order. It would be retaining customers who have placed only one order. And my job as a marketer is to make sure that they're satisfied with their first order enough to place a second one, a third one, and so on. So usually the hardest part is getting from the first order to the second order. And this is one of the challenges that we're addressing in almost every strategy.
Do you typically have clients on a once-off basis, or is it more to have retainer, do multiple projects, or take care of a campaign over a period of time?
According to our statistics, clients would spend at least a couple of years with us.
Marketing, especially when you look at more the technical side of marketing, it's a long-term thing, right? You have to invest and do a lot of work around that.
Yeah, and it also takes a long time to catch what is needed, because you may start with one budget and then afterwards you realize what needs to be optimized, what needs to be improved, and it can't always be done right straight from the start.
We love a good UX designer on our show. Where I come from, sometimes there's a bit of a divide between a UXer and the marketing department. User experience design is about user needs, right? You want to make sure that people get to do what they need to do in an effective and meaningful way, where marketing is also about getting the business message across, right, in a way that resonates with the audience. So if you can combine the two, where the UXer and the marketer works together, there's a potential for more powerful outcomes.
Yeah, I think that the best solution is to have the UX designer as part of the marketing team and not just part of the IT department, because then they understand the inside of our needs and what we want to deliver to the client and what the client wants. And I think for every UX designer, it is crucial to understand the client and the target audience and what they need, what their fear, and how we can help.
In general, do you think there's an understanding from a UX side the depth of what you have to do as a marketer?
Not always. I think it really depends case to case. Some understand because they may have a background in marketing or whichever. They may have worked in some small project where they had to combine everything with what they do. Some may not because they are very technical and they're more on the IT side. So I think it really depends on the person and on their background and what they have worked with before.
So you seem to be somebody who is extremely result-oriented. How do you measure the success of a new experience when you deploy it?
Well, when we launch, for example, A/B tests and emails or whatever, we usually use several tools because, as we noticed, one is usually not enough. You always need a second opinion, even in analytics. And in the end, our analysts usually sit down. They take a look at the data from Google Analytics, the data from our in-house program, and then they may go even deeper to analyze some of the patterns of the people who, did a particular action, this or that.
Yeah.
And then based on these three sort of roads, they come to a conclusion.
With all the new mediums that exists right now, so we have not only the web itself, there is a plethora of tools. Now you also need to measure success when it comes to social media campaign, video campaigns with YouTube. How does your tool set evolve with time?
Something that's always evolving, because the internet world is evolving all the time. I mean, before, if an email was enough, now it's not. I mean, you have to catch the client on their social media, on their website they may be on, through email, through SMS, through a messenger. And in order to track the effectiveness of each of those mediums, you really have to have good analytics that is able to connect all of that and understand which of the contact points led the client to do the action that we want him to do.
Let's say that we have somebody who is listening to this podcast and wants to launch a marketing campaign. Now, he has a startup, he wants to launch something quick and dirty, an MVP. What would you advise that person to do first?
Well, first would be deciding your budget. And, before starting any campaign, it is important to understand your target audience. So once you know your target audience, once you know what you're hitting at, what is their need and what are you there and why do they need you? Then it would really depend on the product. For some products, social media would be the best. For example, retail with, if you can make clothes in pretty pictures and pretty pictures of shoes or your product, then Instagram will work well. If it's something that you can take a video of, then go to YouTube or go to Facebook video. And if it's none of that, then you have to look for other mediums. You can do native advertising. You can do target advertising. You can go through search advertising. So I think it really depends on the product, because for some products, one medium would be great. For another, you need something totally different. And I would expect that a startup doesn't have a huge budget to go on, I would recommend focusing on one thing, one medium, and go through it very well. Because, well, it's better to dive into something and do it well rather than try to conquer everything and not get anything else from it.
Whatever platform needs to drive to something, right? Or there's some kind of message. How do you go about crafting an effective message? Do you ever consider the brand from which the message originates?
Well, I think in the modern internet sphere, this kind of information is getting more and more popular. I mean, I just finished my dissertation in which I analyzed exactly the brand voice of different brands online. Yeah. So how they talked on their website, how they delivered their message in social media. And while they did focus, of course, on the client and on their target audience, they never forgot about their corporate culture and their corporate values. And every other mass message, you could see the reflection of the brand itself.
And in the research that you did, right, this is super interesting. Did you find that brands were mastering that across the board? Or do you still see room for improvement?
Well, I analyzed mostly big brands like Apple, Netflix. So all of them, of course, the big brands already mastered it. But what I found interesting is that the websites, or better to say the pages of the brands, which were more about their corporate culture, which were more focused on delivering their brand voice, they actually ranked better in Google search.
Oh, wow.
It was a hypothesis that I had, and I was very able to be able to prove it.
And talking about Google search, I remember in the old days when I used to do marketing strategies at the ad agency, search was super important. That's kind of the one ingredient we never excluded. Like you said before, you could maybe focus on certain channels like Instagram and then forgo and not do Facebook, or you can go to Snapchat or whatever. But we always, always, always had some activity in the search space. Is that still true?
Well, I think it is. Well, for us, it definitely is. And I think while people are more open maybe to new types of advertising, new spheres where they see the product, in the end, they will still end up Googling it.
Yeah, good old search, right?
A good old search. They will, of course, they may follow the ad, but once they get to the website, they will probably decide to look at a feedback or look at a review of the service or product. And that's where search comes in.
So you can't really talk about your projects. So Olga, I mean, we know that you are highly secretive around your projects, right? I know you're doing awesome work, and that's why we have you on the show. But can you tell me a little bit about maybe some of your favorite channels? Is there something that you, is there one of the channels that you really like working in? Maybe it's Instagram or Facebook.
Probably email, because most of my day is connected with it.
Really?
While Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and all the other different channels, they're very fresh and modern and everyone wants to try them. Many are saying that email is dead. No one checks their emails anymore. But, you know, I send emails every day and people do read them and people do click on them and they react. And sometimes you need the email.
I think we underestimate email sometimes, right? Email still has a role to play in the marketing mix. But now for people who are not used to email marketing, right? I mean, we're not talking about email that comes from some African country soliciting your bank account number. This is permission-based email marketing.
The way a person gets email from us, and the way he or she should get email from any company, is by registering and signing up for an email list. And you kind of understand that if you're registering somewhere, you're going to get an email. But there's also different sign-up forms which are scrolled all over the web right now. You can sign up to get an ebook. You can sign up to get some tips. You can sign up to get any kind of content. And, you know, once you give your email and press send, you sort of also understand that you're signing up for an email. And even these kind of leads, let's call them, they're not always warm, because, you know, they may only want that content. They may not only actually want you to keep pushing them to order something else or to buy something else. So I think that the only acceptable way of sending email is to someone who has agreed. And, you know, I've read a lot about email and deliverability. And to be frank, if you didn't get the email legally and appropriately, you're not going to succeed with email marketing. Sending emails to fake lists, to lists that you may have bought somewhere or whatever, will not bring you results.
As a quick mention about email, on a more technical side, there is a lot of activity on the web right now around emails and what you can do in emails. And I've been extremely lucky to attend at a conference to a presentation by an engineer called Mark Robbins, who was demonstrating all the things that you can do in emails right now. So you can actually right now, Werner, and I'm going to blow your mind, you can right now in an email add something in a caddy and buy something without actually going on a web page. You need just to basically do the last transaction in the web page.
I would love to do that in our emails, but unfortunately at the moment we don't have enough IT resources to implement all of my crazy ideas as to our emails. But I do agree that that is definitely the future. The less steps a client can take in order to do what is needed, the better.
So Olga, this is Olga's personal opinion for anybody listening out there. How do you feel about the depth of some of the analytics that some of the social channels and some of the businesses go to understand the customer? You're probably aware of what happened with Cambridge Analytica and kind of people's personal data and behavioral analytics and that kind of stuff. How do you feel about that? Do you see that as a positive future? Is it a bit creepy?
Well, yeah, I do agree that this is a complicated issue, but I just think that this is something everyone needs to understand in the more modern age. If you're putting information out there in the internet, you have to be ready that someone is going to use it. It may not be Facebook. It may not be whoever. It may be just random people online. And that's something that has probably affected my actions on social media a lot in the last couple of years. So when I was young and fresh, I would post random thoughts of myself or whatever I was thinking about online. And now when Facebook says, 10 years ago, you posted this, I'm like, oh my God.
What was I thinking?
Yes. And well, I think this is something that people, you know, they have to start to understand that this isn't a home conversation. Everyone's watching, everyone's reading. So think about it before you're actually typing it or posting a picture.
Exactly. And now, Olga, I've got this problem, seeing that you're this digital marketing guru, right? Is that on Facebook, for some reason, I'm starting to get all these 50-year-old dating adverts. Now, first of all, I'm not close to 50 years old yet, and I'm a married man. Can I hire you to help me? I'm joking.
Werner and I, we are both fan of a guy called Gary Vaynerchuk, or Gary V.
Gary V.
Yeah. And because he published a ton of content about marketing in the modern age, marketing with all the new tools. So who are your thought leaders or your resources when it comes to that topic?
Well, there are actually a couple of people that I follow who I would believe to be experts in the field. But for me, they're more, you know, Ukrainian-based. The owner, I think, of email server provider Isputnik, his name is Dima. And there's also the CMO, I think, currently of Preply. He has, his name is Pasha, and he has very good analytical basis for everything he does. He actually has an email list with regular updates as to what should be done better through analytics, through A/B testing, and through deeper analysis of data. And also for a more design perspective, this is something actually one of our designers shared with me. It's a page on Dribbble of Yaroslav Zubko, and he has some wonderful examples for mobile design and how it can be optimized. And, you know, his work is just really cool. And I wish all mobile design would look like that, because it's very easy to use. You can get the message which is given across very quickly, and it's very friendly for the user.
Excellent. And we'll post some links to some of these guys. It's always great to hear of Central European talent and insight and thought leadership. So we'll definitely post that through on the Block Thinking site. I've never been to the Ukraine, Olga. I have to admit this, and I hang my head in shame, because this weekend, one of my friends were in Kiev. They've told me it's awesome there. I really want to go see the country. But you've been there, you've been studying, you're a professional in Ukraine. Can you tell us a little bit about how active the tech industry is there, the people that you deal with, for example, in the digital marketing space? What is the activity like there?
Well, digital space is very active right now in Ukraine. There are several spheres through which you can make a good living in Ukraine. And the IT sphere right now is one of the best to go to if you want to live comfortably. So we have a lot of people doing all they can to join the various IT companies that we have. And it is very different. We have companies which have gone global, like Grammarly and FedCube and Macpaw, which provide great products known all over the world. We have startups which are popping up nearly every day or every week, I don't know. And yeah, it's also great, but the level of these companies is, of course, very different.
You just mentioned Grammarly. Like, I don't know there was a Ukraine company. That's great news. My money's going to the right place.
What are some of the key benefits that you think that Ukraine has over other countries?
Well, the biggest benefit is cheap labor, because while our IT specialists have a good salary in Ukraine, it may not always be on the same level as IT specialists in Europe or in USA. So it is. We are very popular for outsourcing, however one may look at it, bad or good. It does bring a lot of money to Ukraine. And well, I hope that our specialists are meeting the needed criteria. And based on the amount of specialists that are appearing every day, I think we are.
Let's zoom back into your company, because the last time I checked is a Ukrainian company. What makes it such a great place to work for?
Well, first of all, for me, it's the history, because I've been with Tronica for a while, and I understand that I became the marketing specialist I am today because of this company, which I'm very grateful for. And apart from that, I was able to grow a lot in my personal sphere and, you know, everywhere. So this is probably one of the biggest reasons why I'm so excited to about the company. But, you know, regardless of the fact, I'm just a very active person who likes to participate in all the videos and all the activities.
You're a digital marketer to the core.
Yes. My husband jokes that, how can I fall for all the marketing tricks out there being a marketer?
When we researched your background, we found a lot of publications. We found that you are involved in postgraduate education with a university in Kiev. So may you share more about that involvement and what do you plan to do with it?
Well, this was a four-year long journey, which I started because at the moment I was working as a customer support agent and I didn't really know the kind of profession I could have in the market. And I do like teaching. I really enjoy it. I'm a good public speaker and hopefully help people learn. So I thought that, hey, a PhD would be good, because if you want to work in a university, then you have to get your PhD. And so that's why I ended up starting the dissertation writing process. But then when it came to choosing the topic, I'm very thankful for my counselor for suggesting the topic that I was really, really passionate about. It was digital discourse, basically. So the way companies communicate in social media and internet. And it was very close to heart, because I was very interested in websites and I was very interested in the marketing sphere on internet. So for me, it was a very likable topic. It was a very long and hard journey, because I may be in love with the digital world and everything that has to do, but, you know, you still have to sit down and write 200 pages of text, and then use 300 sources, and you have to format all the pictures and insert them and rewrite it and write it again and then rewrite it again. So it was a very tedious process, and I was happy to do my defense in the end of May. And while there's still some documents that I have to submit and some still performances that I have to do, the main part is over, and it just felt like a mountain lifted off my shoulders.
So you're going to get your PhD in a few weeks. Congratulations.
The quality of our podcast just went up measurably. Is there any key insights that you took away? I mean, I'm sure you can't just sum it up in a podcast for two guys, but is there one or two interesting things you found during this time?
Yeah, there was actually one of the topics that I started on first. It was microcopy. And since my PhD is actually in English with a focus on the digital sphere, I was really interested in the microcopy. What is it? It's on websites. When you have to enter your card details or perform a particular action, there is a small text which reminds you to this needs to be a 9-digit number or make sure to blah, blah, blah. And microcopy makes it fun. So instead of saying your campaigns can be sent, MailChimp, for example, says, high five, you've done it. Or you're about to send it to a huge list of subscribers. Instead of saying, warning, your list is 10,000 people long, it usually goes to like, here's your chance, here's your big moment, go for it. Which is, I think it's a very user experience friendly. And it's the type of messages that you want to read because it's sort of, I don't know, it builds a really a friendly relationship.
A lot of these micro content or micro copy gets left to some poor developer to fill in at some stage. We tend to forget about it sometimes. But then you also run the risk to become annoying. How do you avoid that? How do you remain sharp and relevant or surprising?
Well, that's a good question. But I think, well, it's about finding that fine line and you don't want to stick that microcopy everywhere. And you have to understand your user journey. And you have to analyze how many times the user will encounter these kind of fun and friendly messages and make sure that it's not every 5 seconds. So if you understand the user journey and what the user goes through while working with your product, then you can limit the amount of microcopy or whatever that he encounters.
So Olga, I don't know if you know, but we have this little challenge. You value storytelling, good content. We want to test your storytelling ability. So in my hand, I have a deck of cards. I have drawn a card for you and I'm going to read the challenge on this card. And then it's up to you to tell us a story. Now, the story doesn't have to be related to your day job. It doesn't have to be related to marketing. You just need to tell us a story. And we want to see. And by all means, you can also lie. You don't have to tell the truth. So let's see how creative you are. Tell us a story about something exciting you have experienced.
Let's imagine a young couple. They have just recently met and the boyfriend has decided to take a getaway for the weekend. And while they did enjoy the small town, let's supposedly say it was a Ukrainian town, they were taking a bus to a nearby village to see a castle, which was supposed to be very haunted and adventurous. And on their way there, they spot people jumping off the bridge, bungee jumping, of course. And the excitement in the boyfriend's eyes gives shock to the girlfriend because she is terrified because he just cannot draw away. And he keeps telling her that they should bungee jump, that he has done it before, that it's so exciting, that it's such so thrilling. And so the next couple of hours go by, they explore the castle and the territories, and they're wonderful and picturesque, and the sun is shining, the flowers are smelling wonderfully. But, you know, there's still in the back that idea that he wants to jump off a bridge. He wants to jump off a bridge. And they end up going back in the bus. And luckily, the bus cannot stop at the bridge. Whew, thanks the girlfriend. And just when they took a small bathroom stop, the boyfriend, of course, finds the perfect taxi to take them to the bridge. She agrees because, you know, well, she could just stand there and watch. She doesn't have to jump. But when they get to the bridge, she becomes excited as well. I mean, if you don't look down, this could be, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity. That's what the whole world is about. Don't miss the opportunity. Don't miss it. And just like that, she's strapped in, she's practicing the jumps, and then 1, 2, 3, she jumps, and she even forgets to open her eyes. And when she already starts dangling at the bottom, she opens her eyes, sees the amount of space between her and the river down there, and horribly thinks that, whew, this is over.
Do we have a prize?
So Jonathan... this is probably the best story challenge we've had ever, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, Jonathan, I'm concerned here, dude, because I'm going to leave this up to you because this is a story told by a marketer, someone whose job it is to tell beautiful stories. So Jonathan, do you think that was a true story?
Knowing Olga, I think that was a true story.
So Olga, did you jump off a bridge?
I did. It was a true story, actually.
Thank you. That was awesome. Who have been the people or that influenced you the most? Who have been your mentors over time?
Well, for me, it were my colleagues, because when I worked in customer support, we didn't really have one manager that sort of taught each of us. We taught each other on shift. We taught each other how to communicate better with clients, how to get the points across. And for me, customer service really helped me formulate what is needed, how to get it done, and, you know, speak to the customer, because they want personal attention. And this personification, which can later be used in marketing channels now, is something that started probably back in customer service for me. But when I came to marketing in Pionica, then of course it was my boss manager at that time. She really did influence me a lot. Email marketing was all on her before I came in. And I basically knew nothing about it when I just started, apart from, you know, how to write a good email. So it was all learning from scratch from the very beginning. And she was very patient and motivating in her support. So that is very helpful from her side.
And what was Vila's book that you read or that you are currently reading? And it's very open. It can be related to design or not.
So one book I'm actually reading right now is Analytics in Marketing. But actually one non-marketing related book I read recently was Heartburn by an author which I later wrote the script for When Harry Met Sally and I think Sleepless in Seattle, Nora Ephron. And I really enjoyed that book as well.
Uga, what's next?
Well, next is growing even deeper into the analytics for email marketing, because there's still a long way to go and a lot to explore. So I'm very excited about that. But I would also like to try something new. You know, the world doesn't revolve around email. So I'm very excited to also try some new channels and learn how they work.
Great. Olga, I know you like to speak at events. You use social media for good. If people want to follow you, maybe connect with you and see the kind of content that you share, where can they go?
Facebook sure is the way to connect with me. I'm there as Olga Voll, V-O-L.
Thank you. So Jonathan, I mean, Olga is your friend. You better do a beautiful closing.
Right. Anyway, so Olga, thank you so much for spending time with us. We wanted to have someone with a deep knowledge of digital marketing, because this is also part of the experience. Thank you a ton for spending time with us. Thank you for the scoop about your PhD. I'm your friend, I actually didn't know. And yeah, we really appreciate the time we spent with you today.
I echo what Jonathan said. I would love to know more about your PhD. I'd love to see you on stage. And I think we need to all come to Kiev and celebrate and hope to catch up with you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you guys too.